Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Makaitis.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 345 with Dr. Bob Nelson. Dr. Bob has figured out what's up with disengagement and the surprisingly simple way to address it. So you'll learn one, just how critical recognition is. Two, key reasons managers don't give more of that recognition. And three, key ways to reward employees at low or no cost. So if you want to take a look at the show notes, or the transcript, or the links to items we've referenced, it's over at awesomeatyourjob.com/F345. And while at awesomeatyourjob.com, I encourage you to check out some of our cool stuff. One cool thing is the Gold Nugget email list. So you can get summary insights written down from each of the guests. Got Dr. Bob and the 344 who've come before him and the guests to come after, sent right to your inbox and a referenceable forever in a handy archive. So that's the Gold Nuggets over at awesomeatyourjob.com. Now, here is Bob's story. Dr. Bob Nelson is a leading advocate for employee recognition and engagement worldwide, and the only person who's done a PhD dissertation related to the topic. He's consulted for 80% of the Fortune 500, as well as presented on six continents. He sold 5 million books, including 1,500 One Ways to Reward Employees, and 1,001 Ways to Engage Employees is his latest. Dr. Bob has been featured extensively in the national and international media, including the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, CBS, 60 Minutes, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, and NPR about how to best motivate today's employees. Here is Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Pete, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to dig into this chat in many ways, maybe 1,001 ways or reasons why I'm excited. So first, not to be too self-serving, but I'm so curious. So they have quite a sentence in your bio. 80% of the Fortune 500 has been one of your consulting clients. Wow. What's the secret behind this?
Have good services, good outreach, and keep at it. I've been doing this 25 years. And along the way, people see what you're up to and they say, we need help with that. So, or we want your message to go to all our leaders or some version of that. And that's a lot of fun. I really love it to be able to help someone, a company that's maybe can't see the forest for the trees and they're in the middle of it and they're being, hammered by different vendors and they're not sure and they lose their focus. And I can help them get their bearings and go through the sea of choices and end up with really what they're after.
That's cool. That's cool. And not to turn this into a marketing podcast, but tell me about the consistent outreach part.
Oh, well, I think anyone knows that you have to keep at it for regardless of how successful your business or your book or whatever you're doing. When I'm constantly promoting, you know, every time you speak, you're promoting. Every time you're consulting, you're promoting. And if you lose sight of that, then you're going to hit a dry spot. you hear about people that they got a big consulting project for AT&T, for 3 years, and then that runs out, and they've got no business. You got to be constantly putting out lines. And so I believe that. And the other thing I believe that as a small business owner, I've got kind of a cottage industry and employee motivation and engagement, that within that there's different strategies that you can't just do one thing. You got to be doing different things. And I'm not sure any given year I'll do 5 or 6 major strategies. Not sure which ones will hit better, but 2 or 3 of them will. And it'll keep me busy and provide adequate funding. So I'm a believer in you got to be promoting and you got to be trying different things. You got to be innovating because the market changes, tools change, technology changes. Now we have a whole new generation coming up. So they may not know the things that could help them that from people before them, from research that's come before them. So there's a lot of, it doesn't stay static, and that makes it go a little bit exciting.
That is exciting, and what I appreciate about that, and thanks for going there, is for our listeners who are not small business owners or marketing professionals, I was kind of inspired by what you said there in terms of you try 5 or 6 things a year, 2 or 3 of them hit. In other words, the minority or less than 50% by a slight margin. And that's just sort of encouraging in terms of trying stuff. Even super rock stars might miss more often than they hit.
Yeah, well, you talk to anyone that's had success, and then there's a certain element of luck in there. But as Mark Twain said, you know, the harder I work, the luckier I get. So I think that for any artist, for a record producer, a song producer, a book producer, you take your best-selling product for any company. I was just talking with Gary Ridge, CEO of WD-40. Well, they've got a fantastic product. It's a $500 million company. They're in 300 countries, and
that's all of them, just about. That is more than is represented in the UN, okay. I believe.
yeah.
Impressive.
You're right on that. But they're all over the globe, and so they talking to them. They're not resting on their laurels. You know, they constantly what are we gonna do this year? They're using their tax refund to do more on social media. You know, it's just you're constantly refocusing, constantly trying to maximize, because we all have limited time, limited resources, limited marketing budgets. So what's the best position? You got, no matter what you're doing, you got to be doing a little bit of experimenting all the time to test the waters for the next idea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Well, thank you. So, well, now I want to dig in a little bit. And so your company is Nelson Motivation, and you got a book called 1001 Ways to Engage Employees. That is a lot of ways. So what's kind of the main idea behind the book?
The main idea of 1001 Ways to Engage Employees is the fact that we're in a time where we need people engaged more than ever before, yet it's at an all-time low. Since the field has come around in the last 20 years, essentially started by Gallup and their longitudinal research, came up with what was called the Q12, a dozen key variables that differentiate high-performing companies from their average competitors. And wow, great idea. They're excellent at measuring engagement. And this is a state of the field now that we have a good bead on, that we don't have enough of it. We need more of it. It's currently costing our country, our economy, $420 billion a year. Wow, bring it on. And so although they're good at measuring, they're not so good at impacting it, at creating greater engagement. And so I kind of looked at that and said, well, I don't know much, but I know if 20 years into it, we have the same number of engaged employees as 20 years ago, the same number of disengaged and actively disengaged employees, you know, give or take 1%, then whatever we're trying to do isn't doing it. So I'm trying to bring a practical, hands-on approach, saying stop measuring and start doing it. Start focusing on the behaviors that get you the results. So this book is about doing that. I took the research-based top 10 variables, factors, if you will, that most impact employee engagement, and systematically with each one of them, I show the reader what it looks like through examples and practices currently being done by successful companies. It's just a book of practical, positive wisdom that can help move the needle for your organization. Whether you manage one person, a group, or have responsibility for the whole organization, you can start heading in the right direction where you can get better and better to have a more highly engaged workforce.
Hmm. Well, so I'd love to dig into, you know, first the data piece for a moment. Now, we've talked about engagement a few times on the show, and I've received more than 100 pitches from PR folk pointing to the crisis of low engagement and how so and so would be a great person to talk to. You made it in, though. you passed the gauntlet. So, but what you point out, which is kind of interesting from a historical context perspective, is you say, hold up now. Gallup's been tracking this thing for 20 years, and it's been just about the same for all 20 years. So this is not a new crisis that we are thinking about. It's just sort of like the state of work for two decades.
Well, it's a little bit the emperor's not wearing clothes. You know, it's sort of like if you want to measure it again this year and compare it to last year and look at each other and say, well, it really hasn't changed that much, and flip the page and look at the next variable, then do it for the next 10 years. But if you really want to change what's going on in your organization, where you start to impact the behaviors of your leaders that impact how employees feel about working there, you'll start getting different results, a different buzz, a different excitement that will be contagious. Let's go down that path.
Yeah.
And then do that for a year or two, and then measure it. You won't need to measure it. You'll be able to feel the difference of what's happening. So my book is intent on trying to make that connection. Less talk, less measurement, more here's what is working now for people trying to make it happen. And here's the results they got. And, you know, you could probably do this one too. Give it a try. Not every idea in the book is going to work for you, but if that one doesn't, flip the page, here's another one. And so the book just came out, and I just saw someone yesterday, head of HR for a large high-tech Fortune 500 company, and she just got the book. It was like 5 days ago, and I saw her copy, and it had dozens of post-its and tabs and a paperclip and folded ears. I'm going, yes, yes.
There you go.
she's in it. I read books that are meant to be used. And you can, or I have managers that say, hey, I took your book. I passed it around to my work group. I have people initial ideas they like in the margin. Doesn't mean I have to do any of them. But if I want to do something to thank them, to engage them, to tap into their ideas, and wow, here's something they check themselves. I can make the connection a little bit easier.
Oh yeah, that is handy. Kind of outsource a little bit of that decision making, get that flowing.
Well, the best management is what you do with people, not what you do to them. So it's I'm trying to share the techniques that you can be doing, not to force people, not to surprise or trick them to working harder, but to say, hey, how would it feel around here if we, who feels we need to have more recognition? You know, if everyone says, oh, no, we're fine, then forget about it. But I haven't seen that happen yet. Actually, if you've got any credibility with them, someone's going to, you know, raise their hand and say, well, boss, I've just headed up to here with you telling me how good I am. That's not going to happen. They're going to find out about, you're quick to find mistakes. You're kind of, truth be known, a little bit of a micromanager. You actually, through your behaviors, you show that you don't trust us. And that's why you get us very defensive, trying to minimize our commitment so we're not the person that you find fault with, you know, and we're spending more time kind of KYA and protecting ourselves and the emails to show that wasn't our decision, stuff like that. And instead of tapping into improving processes and serving the client and ideas for saving money, and, you know, it's all around us. Which way, where do you want people focused? Well, if you want to lead the charge, you got to start getting in front of them and catching them doing things right. They're in line with the goals of your group and the organization. And that will naturally bring out more of that behavior. Whatever you know, the greatest management principle in the world is you get what you reward, what you thank someone for, what you inspect, what you acknowledge, what you incentivize.
Which measure.
Is the best way of telling them on the front end what you'll do for them on the back end if they get the results you wanted. You do any form of that, you're going to get more of that behavior. and not just from that person, but from other people that saw you do it or heard about it. And as you systematically send the message, this is the type of thing that gets noticed around here.
Yeah.
This is the type of thing that we're talking about. The excitement about how Tony achieved the goals that we're after, or the core value so important to our company's success.
That's cool. That's a great lay of the land there. And I'm curious, in your example there, you sort of spoke from the vantage point of sort of an individual employee sort of sharing with manager, hey, here's actually what's up and what's going awry. I'd love to get your take to speak to that person first. If we're talking about individual contributor or who's feeling disengaged at work right now, what do you think that one individual should do when they find themselves surrounded by in a vibe that is not so engaging?
Yes. Well, that's a great question. And it's very on point because the foreword for my book was done by Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, who's the considered the number one coach in the world. And what he wrote about was who owns engagement. And it was fantastic because the way we have it, and again, going back to Gallup, if you ask people, are you getting enough recognition? Are we giving you the skills you need? Do you have adequate authority? Are we doing the right things? It's very, very easy to say, not really. Why don't you work on that? And you do some things, and you come back and, it's a little better, but work on it more. I'd like more money too, you know, and they're off the hook. Engagement needs to be owned by every employee. And so if you're not getting the recognition you feel you deserve, bring that up to your boss. Have a discussion in your group. Bring an idea for how we could start sharing praises to start our staff meeting. You know, I worked with ESPN, and they had a manager that said, whenever we start a staff meeting, we always start the same way. We start with listing as a group five things that are going well. And usually it's pretty easy, but sometimes it's not. We're kind of struggling on some stuff. We still don't skip that step until we name five things as a group, because that's our touchstone. That's our home room that allows us to take on the next challenge. Or I worked last fall with NASA Johnson Space Systems in Houston, and which is ranked the number one best place to work in federal government, by the way. Didn't surprise me in the least, because you could feel it walking in the place. You could see what on the walls, how people talk to each other. You could feel the culture that's positive and people are engaged. And one of the things that they do that I loved is that whenever they have a manager meeting, here's 20 managers, you know, and they always save, as is their custom, 10 minutes at the end of the meeting to go around the room and ask everyone to share something they've done to recognize someone on their team since we last have been together. Wow, 10 minutes. And they said you could just feel the energy and pride of the group rise. And they said they noticed something else, that their leaders will take notes on each other's idea. That's a great one, Tony. I'm going to try that. And so they're constantly becoming better and better. They're a self-learning organization on the concepts that made them great to begin with. I love it. I love it. There's so many organizations that are kind of stuck in the mud, and you know, the problem is somewhere else's and not theirs, and everyone's pointing fingers at each other. And it's more of a blame game. And you know, we got to get out of that. You got to get out of that hole and start looking at the power of positive consequences and how to systematically bring them to bear in whatever you're trying to achieve. And I'm talking a lot about what actually turns out to be from the research, the number one variable that most impacts engaged employees: recognition. 56% of what causes engagement comes from people feeling valued, praised, thanks from their manager, from those they work with, from upper management, privately, publicly, in writing, in emails, whatever. It's a constant. It's a constant. It's not something once at the end of the year at the Christmas party. It's not, I'll praise you when I start seeing something worthy of it. You know, just assume that you're doing a good job unless you're otherwise, because I'm going to be all over you when you make a mistake. You know, that's the natural tendency by management. In fact, I worked with Ken Blanchard, who was the one-minute manager for 10 years. He used to say the leading style of management in America is, he called it leave alone zap, that we leave people, we don't give them great direction or tools or support, but we let them have it when they make a mistake. We zap them and then we keep going back, and we hardly ever use the tools that most drive, most pull the performance, and those are the positive consequences, which are all around us every day. And so I like in opening people's eyes to that. In my original 1001 Ways book, 1001 Ways to Reward Employees, I just had this epiphany that said, this is the most proven principle of management. It's easy to do. The best forms of it have no cost. I actually did my doctoral dissertation on the simple question, why don't managers do this? Did a 3-year study to try to have this common sense notion, but common sense isn't often common practice, Voltaire said in the 17th century. So so is the case today, that the things that sound like common sense, you know. So a lot of times I'll talk to a group and I'll say, you know, the things I'm going to share with you, I know you could do. I'm not here to say, I already know that. That's a given. I'm here to say, will you do them? How will you hold yourself accountable as an individual, as a member of the team, as an organization to this standard? Now, I worked with a Disney organization for 15 years. To work there, they had a standard for leadership. They didn't care how you were managed, where you came from, what you bring with you in your own suitcase. That's nice. Here's how we manage here. And if you want to be a manager, you got to do these things. And then they hire for it, they train for it, and then they evaluate leaders for it. And if someone doesn't do it, they'll call them out and say, hey, you know, maybe you thought we were kidding about this, or we're just going through the motions, but we're serious. You need to do these things. You need to be a visionary. You need to be a supporter. You need to be a cheerleader. You need to be a career developer. Your job as a leader is to help other people be successful. Peter Drucker, my professor, defined the role of management is getting the work done through others, not being a super worker and doing it yourself, not running yourself ragged, not chewing people out till they do it right, but getting it work done through them, which means helping them, which means showing them, which means encouraging them, counseling them, whatever it takes. And if we're really stuck and we're up against it, I'm gonna take off my jacket and roll up my sleeves and dig in with you. We're in this together, you know. So it's wherever people are at, showing them what it looks like to get in the game.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so. Well, there's so much I want to dig into there.
I know you can ask one question. I'll talk for an hour. So,
all right, let's.
I'll try to keep it short.
I want to talk about. So, recognition is the biggie, and yep. You spent 3 years studying why don't managers do it. So, I want to hit that on from two angles. One, in fact, why don't managers do it? And two, again, if you are that individual contributor and you're not getting it, how can you have that conversation? What's sort of like the best practice or script or means of asking for it well, so you don't seem like, oh my gosh, what a whiny, needy, whatever person. So to avoid that kind of reaction.
Okay. Well, the 20-second survey on my 3-year study is why managers don't do it. Number one, they weren't sure how to do it well. Number two, they really didn't believe it was that important, as the research indicates. Number three, they didn't feel they had time. And who has time to do things they don't believe are important to begin with, right?
Yeah.
They didn't feel anyone did it for them. So when they start getting it, they'll start giving it. They're afraid of leading people out. They didn't feel the organization supported it. And the list kind of goes on, a whole list of kind of really excuses why, you know, it's not my job, it's HR's job or the CEO's job or corporate. So it's not anybody but me. Now, and there's a lot of people in that camp. Now, for those leaders that use recognition, there's just one thing going on. And that is, to a person, the common denominator, they internalize the importance of doing recognition. They felt that as a leader, of a group, that they're in charge of the motivational environment for the people that work for them. Not the CEO, not HR, not corporate, but them. It's their baby. And so they believe that they have to impact that. And so their beliefs, they started, our behaviors follow our beliefs. So their beliefs are not, this is a waste of time, I got better things to do. They go, this is the most important thing I need to do. To be a leader, you are a person that are inspiring others. Everything else is mechanical. Anyone could do that. Not everyone could be a leader. So they believe that to the point where it impacted their behavior. They actively looked for opportunities to recognize people when they did a good job, not just be nice, but contingent, when they did a good job, displayed the proper behavior, the core values, got the results, finished the project, whatever it is, they're constantly in their day scanning for that. When they're reading stuff, when they're talking to people, when they're in meetings, when they're in the hallway, and then when they hear or see something about a good job that was done, they act on that thought. They don't make a mental note, oh, Jerry did it again. He's one of my best people. They actually say something to Jerry or bring it up at the meeting or jot him a note or an email, or they do something to connect back with the person that did the performance. There you go. That's the long and short of it. They tried to do that every day, not every person every day, but every day someone. And that it becomes part of their behavior, their behavioral repertoire, I like to say, of what how they manage. They're constantly on the lookout and acting to make the connection.
Okay, cool. Well, so I like that notion that, hey, every day there's going to be some act of recognition. And so your other book, 1501 Ways to Reward Employees, you've got many in mind. So could you share what have you found to be some of the most powerful and simple means of doing that, such as maybe the biggest bang for your buck recognition sure. practices?
Yes. Well, let me tell you, and you're going to love this because the most powerful forms of recognition and engagement, for that matter, tend to be the things that have little or no cost. So when someone says, oh, we don't have the money to motivate people here, they're assuming we got to pay them more, we got to throw a big party, you know, and last year it was a buffet, so this year it's got to be sit down, you know, and they're chasing this dream, and whatever they're doing, they're spending more and more money, you know, years of service awards, they start doing stuff around people's birthdays, and it's like, no, that's not where it's at all. Where it's at is behavior. You got to show people that they're important to you through your actions and the things you say and do. So number one on the list is a simple thank you, a simple praise. And be a leader that is quick to catch someone doing something right and to call them out for it in a positive way, one-on-one, in front of others, even when they're not around, knowing that word will get back to them, etc. Jot a note, send an email, text them on their cell phone, do a company announcement, call their mother and tell them what a great job their kid's doing. And thanks for bringing them up right. I know managers have done that. And let me tell you, there's a lot of stuff like that. Well, that sounds silly. It's not silly to the mother that got that call and the next conversation she had with her son or daughter. It wasn't silly to him either. You know, so it was mm-hmm. like it made their month, you know. It's like, wow, what a cool thing to do. Now, you know, so it's not hard to tap into it. So that whole recognition is a starting point. Now of course you can spend money. If you're doing something you could do something more, you can a simple gift. I work with a company called Snappy Gifts that has just wonderful, unique products, all, you know, under $20, and they you can't get one and not be delighted by it because it's just fun and it's a celebration. On up to, you know, point programs and gift cards, and a lot of companies do trips for top salespeople, that type of stuff. So there's no lack of places where you can spend the money, but again, there isn't. I haven't found a correlation between the amount of money that's spent and the amount of motivation and engagement's going on. My advice is to start the foundation, be the behaviors that are most critical. And then you can layer in other stuff as someone really goes above and beyond. So that's number one. The other things that are truly engaging, again, all no cost, ask people for their ideas and opinions. And if they got a good one, give them permission to pursue it. It's called autonomy. Give the resources to make it, see if you can help them do it, see if anyone else wants to help them do it. Having two-way communication is a big one, talked about in the book extensively. If you're making a decision, involve the people that work for you in that decision, especially those that are going to be impacted by it. I mean, that's, again, feels like common sense, but a lot of managers, I'm the person in charge, I'm the decision maker here, you know, so, well, yeah. Well, you even say that. You got to make the final decision. That's your responsibility. But you know it'll be a better decision if you get impact from your team. And that's why you wanted to ask. Well, in that simple action of doing it, you're showing trust and respect and you're being open. Wow, that's the type of person everyone wants to work for. That is walking the talk of treating them as a partner on the team, not as a replaceable body. If someone makes a mistake, I already said the natural tendency is for people to jump all over them, embarrass them in front of their peers, prove that you're the smartest person in the room. Bravo, bravo. They're getting their resume ready because they can't take it anymore. But try this instead. And the next time someone makes a mistake, take a breath, take a step back and say, you know, I don't think I would have done the same thing, but what'd you learn from that? That could be the best training we've had for you all year. I'm glad you made that mistake. Wow, what's that? That manager through his actions is saying there's something more important going on than something that happened in the last 10 minutes or the last day. We have a long-term relationship. You're important to me. I'm important to you. And I hope that's going to be true for years to come. I'm not going to dump all over you here because you did something wrong. And I make mistakes too. Everyone does. In fact, if you're not making enough mistakes, you're not pushing the fold enough. You're not, you know, it's a little bit too safe. And you got to stretch. You got to try things new. You got to experiment. You got to do something you've never done before. And sometimes that idea can come from the newest person on the team. The person that isn't biased by all the policies we have and how we've been doing it for years. And why don't we try this? Well, you know, you take that person, new person, any person, and you say, well, Sally, let me tell you why we don't do that. We tried it 2 years ago. It didn't work. It won't work now. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Sorry for confusion. You know, it won't happen again.
Don't you worry. I won't speak up or share any ideas.
We're done. You know, now she's going to check her brains at the door, you know. And so how about saying, well, Sally, that's an interesting idea. Why don't you check into that and see what you come up with? What'd that cost you? And now, because who's going to have more energy for the idea than the person came up with it to begin with? Now Sally may come at it differently than the last person that tried it 2 years ago. She might do an internet search. She might check with a dozen friends at other companies. How do you guys handle this? She might, who knows what she's going to do, but she might come back and from her energy and her research, do something that does work. I was working with Johnsonville Food, the maker of great brats up in Wisconsin, and their CEO Ralph Stair told me that he had his admin once say, Mr. Stair, this is back a few years ago. He said, we have such a great product. I've always wondered why we don't market those more online. And he said his inclination was to say, Well, Betty, that's why, you know, upper management's paid the big money. We make those decisions. But he didn't say that. He caught himself and said, Betty, check into that. See what you come up with. Well, fast forward 18 months later, now Betty, formerly an admin, is now running a new division on online sales, $1.5 million product line and growing much larger since then because she had the wherewithal and the support to make it happen. Every company has that possibility. Every employee, I'd go so far to say, every employee's got a $50,000 idea and find a way to get it out. And it's not by shutting them down. It's not by saying, well, that's not, you know, that's only a $10 idea. We're looking for the $50,000 ideas. Well, to get to that one or the $5 million idea, you got to develop a process. Which means you got to look for any ideas and acknowledge people for submitting those, even if it's not one we're going to do or can do. But I like the way you think. Well, I'm looking for more from you. Well, you know, game on, you know, because they're going to come up with them. Let's help them. Let's help everyone on this. Someone in accounting, they're going to do a bag lunch next Tuesday. Talk about cost-benefit analysis. Whoever wants to learn more on sizing up their ideas, come to the cafeteria. We're doing a brown bag lunch, you know. So give them the support and tools along the way. I worked with a company in Connecticut, Boardroom Inc. They have 5 of the 6 largest newsletters in the country. They do these large books, hardcover books. They do a thing called iPower, where they ask every employee, to turn in 2 ideas every week. Well, I talked to Chris. I said, could you do that with your employees, your team, your company? Well, of course you can. How about next week? Can you do it again? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. How about the week after that? Well, how many ideas can someone have? This company has been doing this for 17 years. They ask every employee to turn in 2 new ideas every week about how we can be better, how we can improve process, how we can save money, how we can delight the customer, how we can get new business. It's all around us every day. You know, allow people to grab on and run with it. So that's just one example. I was there, and they got a recent idea they got from one guy, a shipping clerk, hourly paid employee. On one of his 2 ideas, one week was that he said, next time, you know, this book we got, this big book that we ship, next time we get it printed by the printer, if we could trim the page size, he calculated 1/16 of an inch. It'll fall under the next postal rate. I think we'll save some money in shipping. And the CEO said, well, you know, they looked at it, is he right? They cut up a book, and he's right. They made that one simple change. In the first year alone, they saved $500,000 in shipping costs. because of that idea. The chairman,
the 13-ounce threshold. I know it well. It makes a world of difference.
There you go. The CEO, Marty Edelson, he told me, he said, Bob, I've worked in direct mail for 27 years. I didn't even know there was a fourth class postal rate. But to the kid that's looking at the chart day in and day out, he knew it. If we could tap into what he sees and what ideas he has, that's the power. Doing that simple thing, these are simple concepts, but doing it well, they had a couple false starts and they kept at it. They were able to increase their revenues fivefold in 3 years just by tapping into the power of ideas from their own employees. There you go.
That's awesome. Thank you. Well, tell me, Bob, anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
Lay it on me.
If you're looking to lay on the growth, I recommend you check out the growth platform AdRoll, and they've got a fun recording from one of their customers right here.
I come downstairs and I overhear my mom and dad talking in our native Farsi that, you know, potentially we might lose our last shop, and we've always had stores growing up. I guess I was just in my own little bubble enjoying my job in music, and I didn't really realize that potentially our house was on the line. We both knew something had to change. I genuinely firmly believed in the digital process, in getting our garments seen online. I knew we needed help, and I knew we needed a platform to help get our content seen and our message heard. The first campaign that we engaged with AdRoll returned 27 times the ROI. I can turn back and say to Dad, look what we've accomplished.
To learn more about how Nav Salemian turned his family business into a global retail brand, visit adroll.com/awesome. That's adroll.com/awesome.
All right. How about a favorite quote?
Favorite quote. One of my favorite, I got a lot of favorite quotes. One of them is from Bill Hewitt, co-founder of Hewitt Packard. He said, men and women want to do a good job, a creative job. And if they provide the right environment, they will do so.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote because it just in one sentence, it says where we've come from, where we are, where we're headed today. That for the longest time, managing in our country was basically telling people what to do. My way or the highway. I'm the person in charge. You take orders, I give them. You know? And we don't need any creative thinking here. We don't need your best. That doesn't work today. Today, we need everyone in the game because things are changing. Environments are changing. Competition's changing. Your competitors now might be from Thailand or from a different state. You know, you got to be on the game, which means everyone on it. So that's a keeper. I want to go back to the other question. I think you asked me twice here. I haven't answered. And that is, what can an individual employee do if they're in a place where these things aren't happening? And my advice on that is to bring it up to your immediate manager and to make the case for it. So even if it's like recognition, that might sound like I want my own horn tooted, but say, you know, I've had people tell me that they talk to their boss and say, you know, we're doing a lot. I love working here. I love working for you. I'd be able to do it better and do more for you if you could tell me when I especially did something well, because then I'll know what to do more of. And then, you know, yeah, I could do that. Her boss said, and he started doing that. And sure enough, her performance rose accordingly. So to tell them, you know, we're in it together. You can be the employee that shares this with your boss or with the team. Say, you know, I heard this interview, I read this book, I it sounded like something that could resonate with us. You know, could we try some of these things? And that's how you get in the game and have a conversation. All work. That same person I mentioned, Ralph Stair, he had a quote. He said, basically, all we got is conversations. So let's start to impact those conversations. Let's start having different conversations and not ones where we're complaining and griping about management and politicking. And let's talk about things that are working and things that we're excited to be a part of and what's in store for us for the future and how much fun we're going to have getting there. That all becomes very contagious. So if you're working in a place where it's very cynical and it's negative and everyone's kind of dragging into work and waiting for Friday, and fortunately the commute isn't too bad. You can shake it up. Anyone can shake it up. I've worked with companies that one person, not the CEO, grabbing hold, was able to change a culture. True story. I was speaking in Seattle to 800 people, and like 5 weeks later, I was back, and I'm looking at the crowd. And go, this woman, the first row, I go, I said, "You look really familiar." He goes, "Yeah, I heard you speak 5 weeks ago. I wanted to come back and tell you what happened." I'm going, "Well, what happened?" She goes, "Well," and she described what she did, and it was fun because I said, "Well, what'd you know?" So I started using the stuff you talked about. I started doing more recognition with my group, and she said, I left with 7 pages of notes and 1 intention. I said, "I'm not going back and asking permission. I'm going back and doing this." and that's what she did. She did in her work group. I go, "What? What'd you do?" She said, "Well, we were in downtown Seattle. We did a picnic up on the roof. That was kind of fun to celebrate something. And we did a barter for a meeting space for the company on the next block that had a limo company that didn't have any meeting space. And we let them use our meeting space, and they give us free limo rides that we give people for different things." And just on and on and on. It just went for it. And as a result, she said, a noticeable difference in her group. Energized, fun, excited, to the point where other managers were saying, "Hey, what are you doing over there? Your people are, hey, come to the next meeting. We're not trying to hide anything. We're making stuff happen." Literally, this one leader made it happen first in her group, and then in her facility, and then the company tapped into it, and she helped to make it happen across the country to all her facilities. 18 months later, from the first time she heard me speak, they entered the list of best places to work in America, number 23, Perkins Coie, a law firm. And it was really through the efforts of one person. So, you know, people say, well, you could change a culture. It takes 8 years and it's got to start at the top and this and that. And it can do that. But you can also have one person could change a culture, one determined, focused person. And I use examples in my books where that's done from the bottom, from the middle, from there's a lot of ways to get there, right? And that's kind of the fun of it too. You can create your own journey to being excellent.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. And how about a favorite book?
I've been very influenced by some people I've mentioned. Marshall Goldsmith wrote What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Brilliant book. Ken Blanchard, The 1 Minute Manager, Peter Drucker, The Concept of the Corporation. He's and on and on.
Gotcha. And if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
Well, I've got a website. That's probably a good place to start. www.drbobnelson.com. Go figure, right? That's drbobnelson.com. And you can find out. I've got a lot of resources and articles posted for free. I've got all my books there at discounted prices. I've got information about all my presentations, consulting, et cetera, et cetera. And my contact information. So you can call me, you can send me an email. I try to help everyone that comes my way, if it's just answering a question or if it's doing something further.
Awesome. Thank you. And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
Yeah. I would say, again, as an employee, if you want to be awesome, do some things different. To start asking your boss what you can do to help them. I probably have managed 30, 35 employees in my career. I only remember one doing that, and it was a breath of fresh air to say, and something else she was good at too, because I would come in and I'd be all excited about stuff I need to have done, and Katie, can you do this? And she would listen, and she goes, "Bob, I'd be delighted to do that. Let me show you what I'm working on now. And you let me know which you prefer to have me do." And then she would, and I kind of, okay. And then she'd show me. And every time I'd say, "Oh, I'll keep doing what you're doing. This could wait till tomorrow or next week," you know, because she was on it. So that was, basically I'm making the point that whoever your manager is, they're trainable. You could be the person that trains them. So if it's not working for you, start trying to do something different, and starting with talking to that person and give them some input for how they can help you be more effective. And more times than not, I think you'll see a positive response to that.
That's awesome. Well, Dr. Bob, thank you so much for taking this time and sharing the goods.
I hope
that, yeah, that there's lots of engagement and rewarding going on for you and your employees and clients and everybody.
Yeah. Well, anytime you want me back, I'd be glad to continue the conversation in all its different forms.
I was really struck by the survey that Bob did on the study for why managers did not do that recognition stuff in terms of they weren't sure how to do it well. They didn't believe it was that important. They didn't feel they had the time and those sorts of things. So I just encourage you, if you find yourself not doing the recognition stuff, to sit with that question a little bit and say, why not? And I think some of those answers kind of sound a little bit like excuses to maybe an emotional thing. I don't know if I'm just projecting all over this, but I guess if you're not accustomed to doing it yet and you imagine yourself doing it, that probably feels kind of weird or touchy-feely, or that's not how I roll, that's not my style, that's not my leadership approach. And so I just encourage you that, yeah, it's going to feel a little weird if you haven't been doing it, but see if you can find a way to do it that seems as natural as possible. And try it out for size, because it's huge. The research backs it up, my own experience and that of many, many employees do as well. So if you want to check out the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we referenced, you'll find that over at awesomeatyourjob.com/F345. And I hope you'll push subscribe, because if you'll do, you will hear a special episode next. It's from perhaps my most overachievingest friend of them all. His name is Muhammad Mekki. We go deep into his brain, see how it thinks a little bit differently from us moderately achieving folk. So I hope to catch you there, and peace.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. To get the most out of this conversation, visit awesomeatyourjob.com to find today's show notes, transcript, and infographic summary cheat sheet. For more entertaining professional skill sharpening, be sure to subscribe to catch the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.